From west to east and kingdom to kingdom, you're listening to the Connecting with Walt podcast. Connecting with Walt is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. The best way to support the show is by booking a Disneyland, Walt Disney World, Disney Cruise Line, or Adventures by Disney vacation with Dreams Unlimited Travel. Get a free no-obligation quote today for your next dream vacation at dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hey there, hi there, ho there, and welcome to episode 291 of Connecting with Walt. I am your host and Diz historian, Michael Bowling, and I am joined by my co-host, executive producer, and good friend, Craig Williams. Craig, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I heard a news report this morning that made me think of you because you own dogs.
Yes.
And so it was the... This couple that apparently, I think they're in the New York area, I'm not sure, but they built their dream home, but they're selling it because their golden doodle gets pouty in it.
Oh, what?
Yes. So since their dog apparently doesn't like their dream home, they're very sad that they have to sell it.
So I... Wow, I'm without words. First off, if for some reason those people listen to Connecting with Walt, we are not criticizing you. If anything, we would love to get more information on this. So feel free to reach out and drop us an email. But that's wild. I can understand letting my baby dictate our life, but I don't know if I could let our dogs dictate our life. You know, that's another step forward of insanity, in my opinion.
I don't know if there's more to this story, and so they were just reporting the more, you know, the parts that would get people, you know, sort of like thinking.
How do you know if
this is nuts?
Is pouty? Like, I don't know. That's what I don't get. Like, we look at our dogs sometimes when they're like tired or like restless on the couch and like, yeah, you know, oh, they're sad. They want to go outside and have fun. But I don't know. Then I'm also like, they're a dog. Their lives are very strange. They they just lay around all day and have their little bit of fun with playtime and exercise outdoors. But like, yeah, all dogs look pouty in between.
Yeah, well, hopefully it works out and they find a place that the dog enjoys.
I can confirm, though, that it's not about me. So you don't have to worry. I'm not moving anytime soon.
That's good. That's good. Well, a few times a year, we invite members of our Connecting with Walt family to become a part of the show by submitting questions for me and Craig to answer. Questions are generally about Disney theme parks and resorts, Walt Disney's family, the Walt Disney Company, Imagineering, Disney films, and more. So a while back, we put out a call out for your questions. And in this episode, we are going to start answering some of those questions. So, Craig, should we start out with theme parks and resorts?
I think that's always a fun place to start. So, okay. let's jump right into it. Do you want to ask the first question or me?
Why don't you go ahead and ask?
Oh, okay. I'm going to ask one that's a little bit more information-based, because when I saw this one asked, I'm like, oh, I'm actually interested in this as well, too. So I hope you took your notes on it, Michael. Colin asked, hi, guys. Curiosity of mine, how long are each of the main streets throughout all the parks, and which one is the longest, and which of all the parks is your favorite main street?
Okay. Well, I do have that information. The Disneyland Resort, their Main Street USA is about half a mile or 0.8 kilometers long. Walt Disney World Resort and the Magic Kingdom, their main street is also approximately half a mile long, so about the same distance. At Tokyo Disney Resort, they have World Bazaar, which is similar to Main Street USA. It's about 0.2 miles long, which is about 0.3 kilometers long. In Disneyland Paris, their main street is about 0.4 miles or 0.6 kilometers long. Hong Kong Disneyland Resort, it's about 0.2 miles or 0.3 kilometers long. And Mickey Avenue in Shanghai Disneyland is the equivalent to Main Street USA. That's about 1,050 feet long, which is about 320 meters. So for favorites, that stuff, of course, I'll have to say Disneyland, because it has retained a feel of different shops with sort of different personalities to the shops. You know, you do get the feel there that was the original intention, that there are different shopkeepers there running those shops with the different mm-hmm. merchandise, you know, things like that. But Shanghai would come a close second to, because it is completely different with Mickey yeah. Avenue and all of the Fab Five and different characters from, like, basically the shorts run the shops.
Yeah. Did you see the rumors that were kind of spreading around this past week on social media, where some people were claiming that Disneyland had considered turning Main Street USA into Mickey Avenue? Using the Magic Happens concept artwork as proof of it.
I had not heard that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That some people say that they heard from Imagineers that was actually being considered to get away from the idea of Main Street USA and try to go that Mickey Avenue route. And it was like in the concept art, if you looked at it, there was like banners with Mickey's head in the background. Not actually too different from, I believe it was Mickey's 90th anniversary when they put up banners all over the place for it. So it didn't look too far off. But like I can't imagine a world in which Disney just completely changes Main Street USA in each of the parks. I feel like that would be where the pitchforks would truly start to come yeah. out. And
they would
rioting
have to,
would begin.
They would have to tear them down
yeah.
and rebuild. If you've ever seen Mickey Avenue at Shanghai, it sort of reminds me of a Toontown.
It's a complete different architecture yeah. structure. And with Disneyland especially, I don't think you need to have the whimsy of a Mickey Avenue and then a Toontown.
Exactly.
And Toontown is here to stay in, you know, maybe for another 10, 15, 20 years, but it's here for right now. So I can't imagine that would ever happen. I do have to agree with you, though. There is something about Disneyland's Main Street USA that is just perfection. And I don't have the same experience with all of the other international parks that you have, but I will shock some people and say that my second choice, if I'm not talking about Disneyland's, it would be Disneyland Paris's Main Street USA. And only because of the interior portions of Main Street USA going through the two arcades, because I love that it then gives you two different experiences. If you're outside, you know, you're seeing what feels like a familiar Main Street to Walt Disney World and Disneyland. Obviously, you know, you have one of the best castle views down at the end of the street to really bring it all alive. But then you can change the experience entirely by just walking through the arcades and seeing the little stories that play out throughout those. So I think it's that's right up there too. But you know, it's a situation where the first one that they made, they did it best, and everything afterwards just has to have its own charm, because you're never going to replicate that feeling of being on Disneyland's when those gas lanterns come on at night, and just, you know, sitting there waiting for a parade or fireworks or having that first stroll in the morning, or the one last one out at night. There is just something magical about that land.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that some of our shops are different than, you know, shops in the other parks, like in Magic Kingdom.
Yeah. And you still have the cinema. So that's something that we don't have, is our little cinema. I mean, the Bones are still there, the theater, but we don't have it. And I as great as I like a meet and greet spot for Mickey and Tony's Town Square restaurant, I also think that Disneyland utilizes their Opera House space better with great moments. And it just, I like the choices that Disneyland makes with all of their shops. And I mean, obviously we could talk day and night about the interiors of the Emporium and all the little stores there. The toy store inside that area is one of my favorite places to be. There's just so many good things.
Yeah, the Fortuosity shop at Halloween, especially. Oh,
okay. Perfect. Yeah. You love those birds.
I know. So. Okay. For you, I'm gonna ask a question from Andrew. He says, we're heading to Disney World, Walt Disney World, in 2025 with my parents. My family has been multiple times because we love it, but it'll be my parents' first trip. If you were to create some sort of curriculum to help educate my parents on Disney so they can appreciate the trip more, what would you recommend for the curriculum? Books, documentaries, podcasts, maybe which specific episodes Connecting with Walt, Disney Plus series? So, Craig, since this is your home park, what would you recommend?
I mean, first off, I would recommend our specific episodes on Connecting with Walt, those very early episodes where it really was a deep dive into, you know, the buying of the land in Florida, deciding on what to do, the construction of early Walt Disney World. I think there's a lot of appreciation that you can find in the actual entire resort area when you know the background and you know what it could have been, especially episodes that we did on the original concept for Epcot. Those are definitely a must listen, I would say. You know, and we covered every land in Magic Kingdom, a lot of good information, little details in those episodes. So if you see those on your feed, I would absolutely check those ones out as well. I will recommend Epcot, but we haven't made it all the way through Epcot yet. And I think we're on the 15-year plan right now for Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom. So going to have to be patient on those ones. We'll cover it all one day.
We've gotten through a big chunk of what was Future World.
Yes. Yeah. And we still have a little ways to go with the rest of Epcot and the other parks, but we will get there. And we, honestly, I feel like even our question and answer ones, the theme park specific ones, it goes all over the place with questions we answer about the theme parks. But that is where we have a chance to talk more in depth about some of our the other parks, because we just haven't gotten to episodes with them yet. With Disney Plus, I know that was part of the question too. It's not going to necessarily help you plan, but again, from a history perspective, the Mouseketeers at Walt Disney World special that they added a few years back, again, it's like a nice little time capsule of what Walt Disney World was like really early on. And I think it's kind of a trip being able to watch that and then also see how it is now. And I've talked about them before. I'll mention them again. Go back to any of the 1990s ABC shows. If you're able to get those in wherever you're from, Andrew, I'm not sure what country you're from. So they're easily accessible in the United States. But the shows we've talked about with like Full House, Family Matters, even Modern Family was Disneyland. But the middle, it's another thing where it's snapshots in time of Walt Disney World that I really, really love, that helps you really, really appreciate more of the background. It doesn't give you insight on it doesn't give you insight on all these little details, but I appreciate it seeing how it's changed over the years. So that's really what I like to focus on. For books, I'm going to say, if you haven't yet purchased the Walt Disney World 50th anniversary book, that is something you'll want to pick up and start going over. It's a coffee table style book, but it is very detailed. The pictures in there are extremely helpful. I think that is a perfect resource. for a book. And I even like the 25th anniversary book, the Since the World Began. I think that one's also very helpful. I'm not sure how accessible they are to find anymore, but the little Imagineering guides to Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Animal Kingdom, and Hollywood Studios, they are out of date because they came out now probably 10, 15 years ago, but they are really, really, really good books that are pocket sized to be able to kind of look up fun details. It never hurts picking up a Hidden Mickey's book or a trivia book from, you know, whether it's Lou Mangiello or other experts out there. I always would recommend those. And then just to end this answer, because I'm giving too long of a list probably, and Michael still has to chime in, as much as they annoy me, the Dwayne Johnson produced series on Disney Plus, Behind the Attraction, the episodes that do focus on Walt Disney World and attractions that they have in Walt Disney World, I actually would recommend them, because while I hate the approach of how they give you the information, they are full of a lot of information about the rides and give you a little peek behind the scenes of how everything was created. So it's not the easiest way to digest the information, but it is valuable. So that's kind of a short but long laundry list of things for
those me. Those are all good. Yeah, and those are little Imagineering books, you can take them with you in the park. They fit in your pocket, and they're fun to read in line, you know, things like that.
I actually just pulled one out the other day. I was looking through my bookshelf, and I found my Animal Kingdom one. I was like, oh, Betsy, I haven't looked at this in ages.
Yeah, I have them all. Yeah. So I think I have a couple versions because they updated some of them. So I have multiple versions of some of them.
Yeah, I would love if they'd bring that back, but.
Some other books that I would recommend too. It's just some, if you want them to start looking through trip planning books, like The Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World by Bob Selinger. I don't know how he says his name, in Lentesta. So this is a lot of detailed information on Walt Disney World and tips, strategies, you know, insider advice, things like that. There's always the Burn Bombs Walt Disney World Guide. That's another popular guidebook. And again, it has dining recommendations, attraction descriptions, things like that. So that can get them excited looking at those two books. One that isn't necessarily about Walt Disney World, but I recommend it. And that's Eat Like Walt: The Wonderful World of Disney Foods by Marcy Karika Smothers, who we had on the show. It's the culinary history of Disney, but it's about how it influences, how food has influenced the park and Walt Disney's life. So it just gives them it'll give them a little background just on the parks and on Walt Disney as well. So, and it's fun. They might get some recipes out of that. Maybe they want to try, or maybe you want to do a Disney themed dinner before you go, or to talk about the trip or something. You can get some good recipes out of that. This is a fun one. There's several versions of it. I think the one I have is outdated. The Hidden Magic of Walt Disney World: Over 600 Secrets of the Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Disney's Hollywood Studios, and Disney's Animal Kingdom by Susan Vaness. I think she's had like 3 or 5 editions of this book. And this is a fun one, hidden secrets, details, a lot of trivia and all that, but it has details that, you know, the average park visitor doesn't notice and all that. So it's a lot of fun. So
I do have, I think, the very first edition of that one as well. I never updated with it, but that it's a good book to definitely pick up.
Yeah. Some documentaries in addition to the ones that Craig mentioned. I would watch The Imagineering Story on Disney Plus. It just gives you an in-depth look at the, you know, the innovation and creativity behind the theme parks. And it includes Walt Disney World as well.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. And that would get them, I think, excited about some of the attractions and things like that. There is a little YouTube I don't know, documentary, Walt Disney World Behind the Scenes. And it, so it shows the inner workings of Walt Disney World from Imagineering to how the park operates. And it's a little dated, but still, it has some really good information and it's fun. It's always fun to see the behind the scenes, how things work and stuff like that. And then this was a National Geographic documentary. I don't know if it's on Disney Plus. I forgot to check it out. But it's Disney Parks, The Secret Stories and Magic Behind the Scenes. And this is about, it's about the Disney parks around the world, but includes Walt Disney World. And so it was a documentary series that I don't know if it's still easily accessible.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, it came out a few years ago.
Yeah, that's a blind spot for me, but I'll find it. If anyone can find it, it'll be me.
So those are some other suggestions that I have for you as well.
Honestly, I don't think you can go wrong with anything. There's nothing you can take the time to read, really, that will steer you in the wrong direction. I think the documentaries and shows are probably the best way to go, and watching like YouTube documentaries, like you said, as well, too. Defunct Land, anything on, you know, that's defunct attractions. But again, I feel like it paints a picture of the background of Walt Disney World that's not there anymore, that helps you appreciate what it is now. That's the stuff that is absolutely fascinating to me. And, you know, you can go down a whole wormhole with like books from Theme Park Press that,
oh yes,
there's more. You could never read all of them, and I don't think you'd be able to retain the information to then appreciate everything. But yeah, there's so many.
Anything written by Jim Corcus on the theme parks would be a good book.
That is correct. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was good.
It absolutely was. So I will ask you next. This question comes from Macy Ann Serzin, saying, and we've talked about this a little bit before, but always a fun topic to bring up. If you could reimagine Tomorrowland in Disneyland, what would it look like? What would be the theming? Like a Jules Verne steampunk approach? Would that be successful? How can the park avoid a newly renovated Tomorrowland from looking out of date so quickly? And what retired attraction would you bring back to Tomorrowland, if possible? And why is the House of the Future? Why is it the House of the Future? I love that. Most people would jump straight to People Mover. But,
which is what I would. I would bring back the People Mover. Absolutely. So anyway, but so answering the second question, People Mover I would bring back. But it fits into what I would like to do. I think I would like to go back to the Googie retro theme of what we thought the future would look like when Disneyland opened. You know, sort of like from the film Tomorrowland, you know, with the white and the gleaming structures and that sort of way out, you know, architecture and all that. And then it's, you know, that's not going to change then. That would be set in time. And I would keep Space Mountain and emphasize the original concept of it. And it's a concept that they sort of tried to do at Magic Kingdom, but never really fulfilled it. And that emphasized the spaceport transportation theme. Because remember, that was what was cool about the old Tomorrowland, was it was like the world on the move. You had the monorail and the People Mover and the subs and the Autopia and Astro Orbiter. And I mean, you had all this stuff moving, and it was all kinetics. I'd want a lot of kinetics, things to catch your eye.
Yeah.
And I would move the Astro Orbiter back to its original location. I understand the current version, I've been told, is too heavy. So they would have to streamline it, maybe make it a different kind of attraction, but plop it back on the top where it belongs and open up the entrance a little more. I do like the idea of putting, you know, putting in more foliage and plant life and all that in there, because I don't know why all our concepts of the future are devoid of plant life. But but also knocked down some of the old attraction buildings, and because that's so that you have a clean slate, and replace them with attractions. I guess you have to base them on, I don't know, Disney IP, because that's the only way you're going to sell this, I guess. And I don't know. So, but then it opens up the idea. Maybe you could have a WALL-E attraction in there again with transportation. WALL-E is wildly popular, and then have the WALL-E walk around in there. Like they introduced the little droids, those amazing little droids at Galaxy's Edge for a time. Put in WALL-E. I would want walk around characters from WALL-E, have them from Tron. Even have that fellow from Treasure Planet, because that has a following, that with especially with his cool little skateboard thing.
Oh, in there. For sure.
And and could there be a different type of Tron attraction in there? You know, because the big Tron coaster is not light cycle run's not going to fit in there, because there's not enough backstage.
Nor do we need a third version of that.
No, but they could have a different think out of the box. Think and use maybe for some of these things like AI and oh gosh, I don't know. Maybe they could do a Tron thing where it's almost like, I don't know, something that's like the flight of passage, or they're using that technology. So it doesn't have a huge footprint, but you still can enter that world on a light cycle, you know, maybe or something. I don't know. But and I would keep Utopia, but I would definitely try to, you know, new cars that look maybe a little more futuristic and all that. And the subs are the subs, you know, so but I wouldn't get rid of them because I like having water in there, you know, and in that. I don't want it all concrete. So I don't know. I think that's what I would, I think that would be fun. So
I think it would do. I think that's one good idea for it. For me, I think that as much as I like the kinetic energy idea that we've talked about for years with Tomorrowland, and I still think that's important. Like, you can't get rid of Autopia. If you can bring back People Mover, even better. And the monorail, you have that. I think for me, I want to see Tomorrowland more or less start to focus on different sciences of what makes like our future so potentially good. And I know that probably ends up making it look out of date too. So that won't really help, just because we don't know how fast technology moves. But I think about like having miracles for or why can't I think of the name? Adventure Through Inner Space. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I was thinking of the song Miracles
for Molecules. Yeah.
It's just it fell apart there in my brain. But I'm thinking about like that, how you combined health with space and the house of the future. So innovated home technologies, Autopia, like you're bringing about all these different kind of sciences together in one realm. And I would love to see that. Like, no, I'm not suggesting we replace Star Tours with an updated Body Wars
or Inventions. I would love,
And I'm not also suggesting they make an attraction about the importance of vaccines, because we know that would not go over popular with a bunch of people out there. Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know how you would approach it, but I like the idea of looking at the different technologies that can make the world a better place. And I feel like they're close to that goal already, because it almost similar to Future World at Epcot, which, you know, now isn't Future World anymore, but different realms, like with Finding Nemo, Submarine Voyage, you're paying attention to how important the sea is to all of us humans out there. You know, maybe you need to change the storyline a little bit rather than just a voyage through, but you're highlighting the sea in that way. We can still highlight space with Space Mountain, you know, have they're bringing electric cars to Autopia. So we know that is the future of how transportation will eventually become. I feel like the monorail and people mover, if that was to come back one day, you're really still drilling down the idea of public transportation being important. Throw in something health related, as I already said, you know, maybe bring back a Carousel of Progress style attraction too, that highlights not necessarily what's been in the past and where you're going, but finds a way to bind everything together in the land all in one. Looking at it, I think there might be something there in that same way. You know, it's, to me, I think that sounds like an intriguing idea that mm-hmm. might also be easier to update in the future, because all of those different environments and technologies will always still be important. It's just if they progress, they have to spend the money to make sure it's updated along with it. But when I don't want to necessarily see the Jules Verne steampunk style. That to me is very Disneyland Paris, and I'm happy it's there. I don't think I want that brought over. And the retro style could be fun, but I also, you know, I worry too that the whites of everything will start to look, you know, will start to get dirty and not be maintained over the period. So then it starts to look a little gritty. I don't know. I think I want something different while still retaining the best of what's there right now. So get rid of Astro Orbiter, get rid of Buzz Lightyear, get rid of Star Tours, and really start to focus on some of those areas that are there that I feel like could really use the attention.
Mm-hmm. So what attraction would you bring back?
I mean, I've said People Mover a bunch of times, so I feel like I have to say that, but I don't know. I could also go for House of the Future as well, too, just because I feel like that could get pretty wild, but I don't know. I don't know what the House of the Future would be in this point in time. So yeah. I the only thing I could think of is that if they could somehow blend it and be like the house of then and the house of now, if they could still find enough of the old technology that was in the House of the Future and be like, this is what we thought it would be, and this is where we currently are, then I think I could get behind that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's the People Mover. That's the one big thing that is missing. Or Rocket Rods. I'd be okay with that, too.
If they made it the way it should be. But not as loud. Oh, my gosh.
Louder. Let's make it louder and put, you know what? Make it louder and put VR goggles on there. So that way everyone can choose how they want to ride around Tomorrowland, not paying attention to anything around them because they have headsets on.
So it'll be interesting to see if they make an announcement at D23 Expo about Disneyland. Since every year we wish, we expect them to, and they don't.
I don't think Tomorrowland's in the cards right now for the future. I think it's with Disneyland Forward seeming like it's, you know, less than a month away from being able to be officially voted on and passed. I think that's going to be all focus, and Tomorrowland's just going to keep being tomorrow.
It's just going to be a mess. Yeah. It's sad though. Sad.
It's eventually one day it'll become the land where you're like, we'll visit it tomorrow. Let's not do it today. We'll do it tomorrow.
So, okay. So, all righty. Is it my turn now to choose?
Yes,
right?
It is.
Okay. Well, this is from Paul. He says, in the opening song of the opening of Epcot in 1982, Danny Kaye sings about how Epcot contains both the Magic Kingdom and Epcot Center. Is this the only reference, the difference between Epcot and Epcot Center? And under this model of both parks combined for Epcot, what was Walt Disney World considered? Or was this to be a new name for the entirety of the Florida property? I had to go back and find that on YouTube and listen to it.
Yeah, I completely missed this question. So I did not, I did not go back and watch that. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
He does have this weird little explanation. It's supposed to be comical. And he does say that Epcot and Magic Kingdom are part of both part of Epcot Center.
Which that doesn't really make any sense, right? Because it was supposed to be the Disney World property, the Disney World Vacation Kingdom. Epcot was obviously going to be the Community of Tomorrow, and they knew that they needed the Magic Kingdom style theme park as well with it. I mean, that was just secondary to it, ended up becoming the primary and then Epcot Center later. But I can't even believe that they would try to. Were they toying with the idea at one point in time that they were going to rename it all?
I think that the songwriters were trying to be cute. Whoever wrote the script was trying to give, because this was a whole thing about how confusing, you know, trying to explain Epcot's place and all this stuff within the Magic Kingdom. I think it was, they were trying to give him some cute comedic repartee to say.
Yeah.
And as part of his song. Because when you watch it, you'll see that it's meant to be sort of a comedic. See, did I clear it up? Wasn't it confusing? You know, it was that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, and I honestly feel like back in the day, I don't know who wrote the lyrics to it. I don't know if it was it could have been anyone. I doubt it was someone who was too involved in the company, because it probably was one of those things where it was a little song written that no one really bothered to fact check or look through for the opening, made it ultra confusing. But that's like, as you said, was it supposed to be a new name for the entirety of the Florida property? I don't think so. Until you asked this question, I don't even think I ever noticed that line, nor did I ever hear any rumblings that it was all supposed to become Epcot and not Disney World. And that just would be so confusing if you then said, okay, it's kind of like how sometimes it can be confusing with Disneyland, where you're saying we're going to Disneyland. Well, are you going to Disneyland Park or Disneyland or Disney California Adventure? Well, we're going to Disneyland. Like, well, that doesn't answer the question. So I can only imagine how awful it would be if, okay, we're going to Epcot. Are you going to Epcot the park, or are you going to Epcot where Magic Kingdom is? Like, that's, it hurts my head even running through these scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah, and it said, and Epcot Center reflected its status as a theme park within Walt Disney World. And the term center was meant to emphasize its role as a focal point for innovation, exploration, and education within the larger Walt Disney Resort. And then in 1994, and we went through this when we talked about Epcot, the park went through a rebranding. Name was changed a few times. And in 1994, they officially dropped Center from the title.
Yeah, for now.
It became Epcot.
I feel like they're going to make so much like throwback merchandise that someone is going to pitch, let's just make it Epcot Center again. And that'll be for the 50th anniversary. They rebrand it back to Epcot Center.
Yeah, the original name. Yeah. So, but Walt Disney World is the name of everything contained within the property. And that's all the theme parks and the resorts.
Yeah. Unless there is a parallel universe in which this all happened. And we accidentally got the Danny Kaye song from that universe into ours somehow, which that's crazy. But Michael, I'll ask you this one from Parker, who was curious to know more about the Candy Cane Hotel on kind of that corner of Disneyland property by DCA. Has Disney ever tried to acquire it, or they've just kind of let them do their own thing there? Because there is more on that corner than just Candy Cane.
You have the 7-Eleven is hanging around over there, which they will never sell.
Yeah, the 7-Eleven, you have the Alpine Lodge that's right there, too, at that corner. You have that really shady gift shop that I used to go into before they added the really nice Walgreens and CVS's that I'm like, I would rather just buy stuff from there. But hey, that's a lot besides just Candy Cane. But has Disney ever tried to kick them out, as far as you know?
I have been told by sources within the company that Disney owns more property than they have let on in there, including supposedly property that some hotels and motels currently reside on, and that they are now just allowing, they're allowing them to operate. So they don't necessarily own the hotels themselves or motels, but they own the property they're sitting on. So, which could mean someday if they wanted to expand, it would mean the end of those, you know, those establishments. Candy cane, I've not heard anything official. I've not heard anything official about anything in particular. I think we can guess on some of them, but I don't know anything official. Candy cane just went through a huge renovation, an incredibly expensive renovation. They were closed for almost a year.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that they're going to go away anytime soon.
No. I mean, and the same thing with Alpine Lodge. Like, it's so small and just kind of tucked in there. And I've never stayed there. I will never stay there. I love looking at it from the outside because it's so charming, but I'm sure it's not great inside.
I've heard it's been renovated and that it's better than it was.
That's good. I just don't really trust a lot of motel styles anymore. It's just not my thing. You stay at one bad one and that kind of ruins your taste for any of them after that.
Although, but the candy cane is beloved.
I still haven't stayed there.
I've stayed there.
Never has availability.
I stayed there with my granddaughter once. Yeah. And it was fine. It wasn't anything fancy, but it was fine. Now I have not stayed there since they renovated it.
Yeah. I want to stay there. It's never available, or by the time I see it, it's so expensive that you can stay at either the Hyatt House or the other suites that are not Homewood, but I can't remember which ones that are like right there up above the CVS and the Walgreens. Like they're just the same price sometimes as candy cane. If there are rooms available.
Yeah. What's nice is candy cane has the bus.
Yeah.
They have transportation, which is nice.
Yeah. But I would not be surprised if Disney has a ton of property in the area. Like, I mean, they can only have so much, but more, like you said, more than they lead on to having, because they're working out with just that, the McDonald's model, where it's more important to own the land that you build on rather than owning like the franchise or the building. The land's what is valuable. And if they want hotels to pay for basically rent on that land and they built those hotels and they're the ones to operate it, that's great. Disney's still going to profit off of it. And ultimately it's driving extra traffic to their parks. So that's even better. But if they do decide one day they want to build a hotel on there of their own, then yeah, they can do that. But that costs them money to construct and operate and staff and maintain. So it's almost better just owning the land, having it in your back pocket and letting other people do all of the work. So I think you're probably right with that.
Okay. So are there any other questions you find interesting in theme parks, or do you want to move on to another category?
Yeah, I would say we only have time for probably like one or two more questions. So we can move on to another category if you'd like.
Okay. And we can always come back to theme park. I know there's one or two little questions in there, but let's see. Let's go down to the Imagineering category, because I break these up a bit because they're sort of like theme park related anyway.
Oh, yeah. The one we have with this, I think this easily could be a theme. Yeah. This is a theme park question.
And there's two questions in here that are sort of related to each other. So that maybe we could tackle both. Let's start out with Connor. If you could add an attraction or a new pavilion to World Showcase based on a Disney movie like Frozen Ever After in Norway or Ratatouille in France, what would it be?
It is such a difficult question because I struggle based on what we think plans are with other parts of the Walt Disney World parks right now, because I don't want to overblow Encanto, but the fact that they're doing like Tropical Americas for Animal Kingdom, most likely now puts Encanto over there. But I also see a world in which they could really, really, really put it in World Showcase, and it could just fit in easily. Mm-hmm. If there was a Spain pavilion, I feel like they could easily do something related to Disney Wish with Asha and that story, since that basically was trying to be like on the Spanish Peninsula type of area, even if they from a made up place kind of, you know, it definitely has that inspiration in it. And I know I'm in the minority of the world who enjoyed that movie, but I did. So
I haven't seen it yet.
I finally broke down and watched it, and we're like, this is really enjoyable. And yes, they did try to overpack it with like little nods to the other movies. And at times it was like kind of, you groaned with it. Like they didn't have to do that, but ultimately it's, you know, I think people kind of they look too far into it and wanted too much of it for the 100th anniversary movie. It's just another movie in their whole lineup. So maybe it was bad on Disney's marketing. But my ultimate nerdy answer here would be I want an Australian pavilion, and I want an attraction based to the Rescuers Down Under, because I feel like the Rescuers get absolutely no love at all with Walt Disney World, with anywhere. The Rescuers just are now like a blip in time, and you hope to see them maybe pop up like at a special event at Disneyland, like Sweethearts Night, and maybe they'll have them out for a meet and greet. But that movie was so impactful on me as a child. I loved it, where I didn't really care for the original Rescuers, and I feel like they could still find a way to bring that to life and do it justice, because there are a bunch of people like me who grew up in the 90s that are now even more invested into Disney parks, that are looking for those Renaissance style area movies that just haven't been represented yet. And I think that's an easy one, as well as bringing in Greece with Hercules too, which that would also be wildly popular. But those are kind of the two big ones for me: Australia for Rescuers Down Under, and in Greece for Hercules.
Yeah, well, mine was Greece. That was the one that I would bring in. And I have, and because again, the architecture that you could bring in would be incredible. You know, whether you wanted to build the Acropolis or whatever you wanted to do in there. And then, architecture sort of based on that. But, and you could have two films in there, because I would like to see, again, a Hercules attraction of some sort in there. It could be a dark ride, it could be something. But then maybe more, I know everybody always wants Mount Fuji over in Japan, but I thought Mount Olympus, that would be a great backdrop for it. And that could be a Fantasia ride too, where you're going to the top of Mount Olympus, and as you go down, you see the characters from the Pastoral Symphony, you know, in there, and even some of the other Fantasia characters, you know, and it could be that, or even Hercules could be, you know, that kind of thing, a Mount Olympus kind of attraction, and maybe a Fantasia dark ride, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. And the food would be fantastic in there. No, I would want a sit down restaurant and a fast, a counter service restaurant.
Yeah. Well, in for there. Sure.
And, so I just think, you know, the problem is getting the financing for it, because Greece is, you know, for years has been struggling financially. So, you know, that's part of it, you know, where that's hard.
It is, but I feel like at this point in time, I mean, I guess you need to have some support with the countries that you want to work with, because, you know, you do need them for, you do need them because you want to pull over actual people from the country to come and work and represent their countries in that way. But ultimately, like, it's one of those things where who cares about how closely you get funding on and working with those countries? Just invest in the parks in that way, the same way you invest in lands at mm-hmm. other theme parks. That's my opinion on it. Move forward and build something that feels right for those areas, and then worry about it later. Worry about mm-hmm. all of those details. Like, until, you know, till well after the pandemic, we didn't even have people from countries representing those areas again. So if you have to maintain it for a little while with just any cast members from the United States or wherever, I guess do that. But I mean, take the opportunity. They have expansion pads. They have stories they can tell.
Oh yeah.
Fit it in. Mm-hmm. Just do it and worry about it all mm-hmm. later.
Yeah. Fantasia would make a great boat ride.
It would.
I love boat rides. So
I know. Well, I'm assuming the other question in this category that you were talking about was the one from Susan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which that's, I think we both could easily answer with boat rides with this one. But Susan asked, if you two were tasked with expanding the World Showcase in Epcot, you can't add any countries, but rather expand existing countries that don't have a ride with an appropriate IP and ride. Can we describe what type it would be? Would it be a dark ride, a boat ride, a roller coaster, a combination? What would we do with that? So, Michael, you want a boat with Fantasia.
But Greek, yeah, but it's not an existing, it's not an existing pavilion yet. Yeah. There's a couple that came to mind. First of all, in Germany, build the Rhine River Cruise. They have the show building. They're using it for storage and stuff. It was originally planned to be part of the pavilion's expansion. It was supposed to be a simulated boat ride along the Rhine River, and it was supposed to showcase scenic landscapes, historic landmarks, and cultural highlights of Germany, but they never built it for financial reasons and changes in Disney's plans for the pavilion. But what it could be is there, the Snow White attraction is gone in Magic Kingdom. It could yeah. also be an updated version of Snow White in here, and it could be incorporated into this, the Rhine River attraction, or at least use the show building, whether it's an updated dark ride version of Snow White, something like that in there. The other one that I was thinking of is build the Cherry Tree Lane in the UK pavilion.
Yeah.
But I know they had the teacup idea. Do a Jolly Holiday attraction on a carousel horse and maybe use some of the technology that's similar to Avatar Flight of Passage or something like that. So, because it needs something. And I think Mary Poppins deserves an attraction. It's a wildly popular film. I liked the sequel, but I would want it based on the original film. And, but I just think, and people really would love to ride Carousel Horse. Mm-hmm. I think that would be cool. And, I don't know. So those are my two that I would add.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that they're bad choices either. I mean, so Mexico was out right away because we do have a boat ride with Grand Fiesta Tour. And then from there, Norway's out because that has a big one. China, I know that's like 50-50 because I don't think at this point Reflections of China is ever getting updated, even though they went out and did all the work on it, but it doesn't seem like it is. So you could include an attraction focusing mm-hmm. on Mulan, but I struggle to think of something with that.
I know. So what would it be? I thought of that.
I couldn't figure anything out that like felt like it would fit in. I'm sure there's someone out there who's already figured it out. So let us know. We'll include it next time we do a Q&A. We'll just read it. So then after that, you move on to Germany. And I think you're 100% spot on. Do the Rhine River ride, but include Snow White in there too. Because let's be real, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is entertaining, but it is just a snapshot in time of that attraction. It doesn't tell the story of Snow White at all. So I still think that you can easily include Snow White in there. Italy, I could easily see a Pinocchio ride. Yes. I know it doesn't necessarily fit in with the theme. People would say more Luca, but again, I can't wrap my head right now around a concept with Luca, but I could see them just doing a Pinocchio dark ride if they wanted to add something small, compact, still fits in with the area. And then we already talked about Japan with the roller coaster. I would love to see that. Aladdin. I feel like you could probably do something with Morocco. You might be able to do something with Aladdin, but nothing I'd be passionate about. Maybe like a magic carpet ride style with Avatar, but like technology, I'm not there. So winding all the way around, that leaves, technically Canada has an attraction. So really, it leaves UK.
Brother Bear. Brother Bear in Canada.
Yeah. I don't think Brother Bear warrants an attraction. Like people have said, oh, give them a raft ride with Brother Bear. To me, that's not it. UK, as much as I would love Mary Poppins, I'm going to take it in a different direction. I would love if we could get an Alice ride utilizing trackless technology like it's been done with Runaway Winnie Railway and or Winnie the Pooh in Tokyo. You know, just the same we have for Rise of the Resistance, but do it more like Winnie the Pooh in Tokyo, but do it with Alice in Wonderland.
Be more zany.
Exactly. And I feel like Alice is underrepresented in Walt Disney World, really, outside of Mad Tea Party. That's kind of it we have for Alice. And
that's a good idea.
I feel like that type of ride style fits. And yeah, you could easily just put Mary Poppins in there too, but I don't know. Alice as a trackless dark ride where you don't know where you're going next. You don't know how it's all going to play out. There's more than enough that happens in that story to really, really showcase an attraction. And at the worst, you have a blueprint with the Alice dark ride at Disneyland where you know how to work a story, but it's got to be on a little bit on a bigger scale.
But they could even incorporate different scenes that we don't have at Disneyland, like, you know, Walrus and the Carpenter scene and that, the crazy race that they did, that, which would work really well in that kind of a concept.
Oh yeah. Like you think about like breakout moments where for like going on a race, you could pull into the little rooms like they do in Runaway Railway and stuff, for like Star Wars, where you just pull in and then get out of it. I think of it's literally stealing what happens with Rise of the Resistance, but I could see there being a scene with the Queen, maybe like a courtroom scene with the Queen where she's like really losing it and your vehicles are just kind of being sucked in with her power. Like I can really see that being something successful. I know it takes up a lot of room, but I don't know. It's intriguing to me. That's like the main thing that I can wrap my head around fully, besides the boat ride with Snow White.
Good ideas. Yeah.
So, but I think that's all the time we have for theme park questions today, Michael.
Okay. Well, in our next episode, we will continue with questions in the other categories. There are a lot of them. But so listen to us next time. But now it is time for This Week in Disney History. All right, Craig, I believe it is your turn this week. What do you have for us?
Oh, I've got a great one. There was a lot that happened this week in April in Disney history. I mean, you have some big ones like, well, Animal Kingdom, but that's not what I'm here to talk about today. I'm talking about April 22nd of 1999, when one of the greatest attractions had its opening ever, its debut at Disney's MGM Studios. And that, of course, was the one and only Sounds Dangerous with Drew Carey. And this show was something else. It was obviously it was a snapshot in time of what MGM Studios, Hollywood Studios, was back in the day. It replaced the Monster soundstage, which I always enjoyed that show. It was mm-hmm. it was a cute little show, but then they updated it, wanted to add in intellectual property, and there's no better intellectual property out there in the late 90s than Drew Carey, you know, because the Drew Carey show was going strong on ABC for them, and that's not being sarcastic. It actually was a really big show back
then.
And despite the fact that you can't see it now because they had too much music in it that they can't license out, so they can't really show it anywhere, and you can't stream it anywhere.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, it's just, it was so full of music that they would have to go back and rework so much of it to make it be able to release. So they released like the first season on DVD, and that's all you can find. Nothing else afterwards. So that's been lost to time. So now people primarily know Drew Carey as the host of Price is Right, but he did have a vibrant stand-up career and TV career before The Price is Right, believe it or not. And this, if you didn't get a chance to do this attraction, Drew Carey played a security guard that was walking around with his iconic glasses that he had with a camera in there. And he was like trying to track down, I believe it was missing artwork, but in his attempt to do this, he ended up breaking his glasses, so the entire theater just went dark, and everything else then relied in the attraction all based on sound, and hence the name Sounds Dangerous. And yeah, it was an attraction where you got to sit in the dark and just listen, which it was a strange concept, but still highlighting the importance of sound when it comes to movies and TV. So it fit the old studio model. Obviously it did not survive nowadays. Now you see Vacation Fun with Mickey and Minnie, the special cartoon mm-hmm. they made, which I don't think is a good use of the space either, but better, you know, I guess better than when they were just playing a highlights reel of the different Star Wars movies there for a little bit too. So I feel like since a show left, they've never known what to do with it. And maybe just demolishing it and starting over would probably be the best. But regardless, one way or another, Sounds Dangerous debuted April 22nd, 1999.
I remember that. So, but I don't remember that sound. What did they call it? It was like a big deal because remember they added it to Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln at Disneyland. And you listen to him get his hair cut.
I knew they did that.
Yes, they did. It was terrible. Wow. It was awful. They changed the show, and there was this show where, Lincoln comes in and anyway, they have him getting his hair cut, and they have him getting his photo taken, and he's meeting people and talking, and we're all wearing our headsets listening to this. It was dreadful, just dreadful.
Michael, I am so jealous I didn't get to see this. I've never heard about it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You literally are blowing my mind with this. I am. Ugh, that sounds awful.
Let me make that
perfectly clear.
It was terrible.
But it's one of those things, if you were able to be in the theater and experience that, like, you have that story forever. Disaster. Oh, good stuff.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Well, mine is April 21st, 1920. Someone that we probably don't hear too much about anymore. Cartoonist and animator Bob Morse, born in Los Angeles, California. He came to the Walt Disney Studio as an apprentice in 1940. He worked on Dumbo, The Reluctant Dragon, and The Three Caballeros. And then during World War II, when the studio was doing all those special projects for the United States government, he helped animate training films for Navy pilots. And then he was drafted into the Navy, and he was ordered to head up a special unit that produced animated training films. And then after the war, he returned to the studio and he served as a story man. He contributed to animated shorts like Inferior Decorator, the package feature films, including Melody Time and Make Mine Music. In 1951, he headed the one-man art department for publicity, and he ran that for 3 decades. So he single-handedly developed all the promotional art concepts for Disney films and later for the theme parks. He was later named creative director of marketing. He designed many of the Disney movie posters that we enjoyed, Christmas cards, letterheads, magazine covers, logos. He also was one of Walt Disney's official autographers. So he signed thousands of photographs with Walt Disney's famous signature. So in addition, so, you know, some of those signatures that, that are being sold out there, I wonder how many of them are Bob Moore's.
Yeah. Well, they recently started, I want to say recently, I don't go in all the time, but recent to me at our World of Disney, or not World of Disney, sorry, in our Disney Springs, the Art of Disney store, they started selling autographs of Disney voice actors and then some of Walt and Roy. And I'm like, I know what the voice actors, they're still, they're all alive and they know that where they're getting those. And they're also selling like Jodie Benson autographs for like $300, $400. And I think I have a stack of her autographs up there from one of our Diz trips. So I'm maybe I have a retirement fund one day, but
Rory's college fund. Yeah. Right,
I'm shocked. People actually bought it too. Cause the one day I walked in and I saw it there and I was like, no one will ever buy this. Like it's, it, she will sign at a convention for far less. And then next time I walked in, it wasn't there. So someone did. But yeah, they had like ones they were selling with Walt's signature for like five figures. I'm like, that's they're a doing lot. That, you don't
they're,
know.
They're doing that at Disneyland and Disney California Adventure as well.
Yeah.
The same exact thing.
Brilliant, giving people the chance to own this kind of memorabilia. But it's like, if I spend that much money, I want without a doubt to know 1000% that that's Walt's signature on it. But I don't think there's any amount of money in the world that I could spend on a signature like that. There's, it's just not that worth it to me.
Yeah. Now, in addition, Moore also drew the Little Golden Book series from 52 to 53. And also he designed the Walt Disney United States postage stamp in 1968. And the he also designed the official mascot for the 1984 Summer Olympics. I believe that was the one the United States boycotted because the Soviet Union was hosting it and they had invaded. I don't know. I can't remember which country they invaded. But he incorporated, the mascot was Sam the Eagle from America Sings. And so he incorporated Sam the Eagle into, the logos for each Olympic event. And then he, after 43 years, he retired from the Walt Disney Company in 1983. He was named a Disney legend in 1996. And then he passed away in Hawaii on November 20th, 2001. So a man that did all these incredible things, and probably most people never heard of his name, but we still enjoy, you know, everything he created to this day. So anyway, so that is it. So speaking of signatures that you're talking about, Craig, a couple weeks ago, I went to a special event here in Old Sacramento, the historic waterfront in Old Sac. And there's an establishment called Stage 9. They're a licensed seller of Disney art and also of another like film memorabilia and stuff. But Disney art's their big thing and they hold special events. And I've gone to them before and I've talked about them. But I was at one a couple weeks ago that was the Voices of Flower, Bambi, and Thumper were there. And they talked about their experiences, the film, because I thought, I've seen their signatures for sale at Disney California Adventure.
Yeah.
So I was able, I bought a piece of art that was created for the event, and they autographed it. So it was a lot cheaper than the one that's on sale at California Adventure. But it's not quite, they had two pieces of art, and one was gorgeous. Just of Bambi and the mother, and then all the animals in the little glade, you know, in the thicket. And it was beautiful on I think it was like a watercolor kind of thing. And they autographed that. But that was out of my budget. And I thought, where am I going to hang this? Because it was huge. Yeah. But then it was a little square wrap that I got that they of Bambi Flower and Thumper when Bambi is naming Flower. It's sort of that scene. And so they autographed it on the back. So, and I had a little place in my family room where I could hang that. So, but anyway, so I'll talk about it in a future episode, but it was the first time all three of them were together.
Yeah, that's so cool. That is so, so cool. I remember you telling me about the opportunity, and it's, I love Bambi so much. I know we talk about it when we get the chance to. It's such a special little movie. I'm very excited to actually show it to Rory soon, because he is every week he's starting to pay more attention to what we watch. I complained to you off mic at one point about I love the Muppets and Sesame Street, but I was ready to pull my hair out with how much Elmo we had to put on in the background. We only gave him 30 minutes of TV time a day. And when all 30 minutes of that are the same three Elmo cartoons, you just want to lose it. But now we've been doing like little 30 minute chunks of Disney movies or Disney sing-alongs and stuff like that. And he's really starting to pick up on the movies. And the hard part is then us having to shut it off, and because he wants to keep going. But I am following Kylie's lead and trying to stick with what they say, so keeping it to 30 minutes.
I think that's good. Do you play like music in the background for him when he's not watching TV?
Yeah, so when we eat dinner all together, we sit in our front room, and that's where our record player is. So I'll play, you know, one side of a vinyl while we're eating, and then flip it over for the next time we're all sitting down eating together. So we do that. And, we don't play a lot of music in the house just in general, because when he's sitting down playing, he's just kind of content with all of his loud toys that are making their own noise. Mm-hmm. So not just ambient. And then we take a lot of walks outside, and he's not listening to music then. But like at his daycare, I know they're playing music like nonstop. And so he gets enough of that 5 days a week. We try to keep things quiet and calm and peaceful. And yeah, every now and then we'll play some like Disney music and stuff in the background when he's just playing in his room.
Yeah, we would play the music for the kids, like if we were driving somewhere or something. And but Sunday was Symphony Sunday, as I called it. So like for dinner, we always played classical music. And all day in the house, it was just classical music.
And yeah, we we mostly do movie scores, but like with records, I'll like go back and forth. It'll be like a band one day. And then like last night, we actually just started side one of the Coco soundtrack. And he almost couldn't eat because he was just swaying back and forth with all the music. He was really feeling that. So I'm happy. I feel like I accomplished something there.
That's cute.
He enjoyed the music from one of my absolute favorite Pixar movies. So I'm wild about that. But yeah, in the car, that's the hardest part. That's our battle, because we did a lot of classic rock for like with him, because that's like probably the main style of music that Kylie and I share. So a lot of David Bowie and Beatles and very, very heavy into the 60s and 70s. And now when Kylie drives him around, it's more pop and country. And when I drive him around, it's just all over the place with the random stuff that I listen to. Or then sometimes he's just hearing my podcasts, and a lot of my podcasts I listen to are very vulgar. So I know I'm quickly running out of time for it's his daycare has a strict policy on once they start talking, I think they're allowed to curse three times before they're suspended for 2 weeks.
So, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's funny that they have to have a policy.
You know, it's some kid ruined it eventually, or at one point they had to come up with it, but
that's crazy.
Good stuff. Yeah.
So, there's a Disney Nature film, a new one coming out, because I love the Disney Nature films and the True Life Adventure films. But on Disney Plus, it's not going to be released in the theater. Tiger, which is one of my favorite animals, tigers, is coming out on April 22nd. So I'm really looking forward to that.
So yeah, I am extremely excited about that too. And I would love it to come out in theaters and do it justice. But I feel like this is actually, you know, we heard maybe it was back with Chapek or the origins of Disney Plus, wherever, where it was, we're going to make a more conscious effort to think about what should be released on Disney Plus, what should be released on theaters, because they can't just throw everything to theatrical runs and lose money on it. I think it's a perfect addition for Disney Plus. I would love to see it on a big screen, but knowing that they probably take a loss on these documentaries when they show them in theaters, outside of, like, you know, when they first really revamped the lineup with Planet Earth, and they, I feel like they had a good run with a couple of those in a row, but I would rather see them keep making them and just put them on Disney Plus rather than stopping the series altogether.
Yeah. I hope they do keep making them. I was a little worried when they bought National Geographic that they would think, oh, well, we don't have to make nature films anymore. We have National Geographic, who doesn't necessarily make their own films anymore, from what I've read. But so I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah, and there's not a day that doesn't go by that I don't get a press release for something new coming to National Geographic. Yeah. So it's a brand that they have definitely invested in. But I think that to them is their when HBO, Warner Brothers gobbled all those companies up and they bought Discovery. They really leaned into, oh, we can use the Discovery brand and we can make a lot of reality style television, home makeover shows, cooking shows. We can make those for cheap and really just go wild with those. And, you know, I feel like that for Disney, that was National Geographic. These are cheap to make, and people watch them, love them. So let's go with it. But I feel like National Geographic puts out a better product than Discovery. But that's just my opinion.
No, I agree with you. Absolutely. So, all right. So, yeah, definitely everyone watch the Disney Nature film Tiger so that they'll keep making these. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Well, Craig, until next time, how can our listeners connect with you?
As always, you can find me on social media, Facebook, X, Twittix, Instagram at Teleclaster. You can find me on all the different podcasts I'm on the Dis Unlimited Podcast Network. And you can find me via email, craig@disneyinfo.com. What about you, Michael?
Well, you can send me messages at michaelbowling@disneyinfo.com. On Twittix, I'm at mbowling121. Facebook, I'm Michael Bowling - Connecting with Walt. And Instagram, I'm Michael Bowling the Diz. You can connect with me and Craig on Twitter at Connecting Walt. If you would like to listen to more shows on the history of Walt Disney, his studios, his Imagineers, and Disneyland, check out our Disneyland podcast archives for my Disney history episodes on the link Craig includes in our episode description. And look for past episodes of Connecting with Walt on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Pandora, and Amazon podcasts, where you can subscribe to our show and leave some positive reviews and ratings when possible. So thank you for making us a part of your day. And remember, I only hope that we don't lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a man, Walt Disney, and his brother, Roy.